Bill and I commented, it's a bannering on our books to show where we're introducing new characters coming out of the Dark Days, Dark Nights metal storyline. So actually, the Dark Days, Dark Nights is our big event. It's a crossover event. That'll be starting in June, July, for the first two parts. On the first two parts, Jim, Andy, and John are going to be doing the art on the casting and the forge, and then the chores are handed over for the main series. Over to Greg, who will be running that. You knew that, right? The main issue for us right now is this, what we're trying to do is that with all this, is that we're trying to really do a big event, which is the first thing which we always do. We always have a lot of success with that. But on top of that, what we're trying to do too is introduce new ideas, new concepts into the DCU, and therefore, from there, hopefully expand out the universe. When we did Rebirth, we were able to bring a real sensibility back to our core characters, and instead of trying to constantly fix them, what we're deciding to do now is trying to introduce new ideas, new concepts. It's very difficult in the marketplace, but coming off of a major event and using major talent, we're hoping that this allows us to really build and expand on the DC Universe. We have success going, and we want to continue to build on that. It's hard to do, but I have a lot of faith in, we have a lot of faith in the people here. So that's the framing of it. You want to take an extra part?
No, just other than it's just been tremendously exciting, it's been a privilege to share the stage with these guys. You know, I've known them my entire career, but and on the front lines with me, well, all working together, gives, I think, all of us the confidence and extra boost to do our best work and hopefully make a dent in the marketplace.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to, and I'm going to frame up the masterclass too, because masterclass is an expression you hear a lot these days about really just, it's about teaching. And one of the things we're really leaning on right now is bringing the sense of craft back into the comic storytelling, the collaborative aspect of the writer and artist working together to really enhance and grow the business, and grow the art, and grow the storytelling, and make it dynamic again in ways that we haven't seen for a while. So my hope is that through these, and we're starting the masterclass with these four, but it's expanding out to more artists going forward. But what I like to identify is that just if you look at their track record, the history of what they've done over the years, you can clearly see why we want to start with these four first. Because not only are they just premier artists, but also they're strong teachers. They teach, they sit with the talent, they sit with other artists to teach them. They also teach through their storytelling so people can learn from what they're doing as well. So that's a key aspect. Again, this is about, again, just setting a sensibility, a tone, a voice that we feel we might have backed away from the comics. We want to re-embrace and bring that energy back to the comic book business too. Okay? So we have a series of books that are coming out. Like I said, it starts with the forge and the casting, it moves over to metal, and then ultimately it moves into the Dark Matter books. Again, like I said, it's a bannering. We have five books. If you look inside your little pamphlet there, we have five books that we're introducing. The first one up is from Jim Lee and James Tynion, which is called The Immortal Man. It's a new series. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Should we go through it? You guys want to talk about your books?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, look. Like Dan said, this book ties into what Scott and Greg are doing in his book, their book, Metal. It focuses on metal. I don't know, spoiler alert, but the idea is that so we're using F-Metal as sort of the basis to kind of launch our story. Some F-Metal has come to the very beginnings of the DC Universe timeline. And has basically struck five siblings, giving them immortality and metahuman powers. This group of siblings immediately begins to squabble and fight amongst each other and form factions. And each of these factions has a different point of view. Should humanity be subjugated and enslaved because we're more powerful? Or should they be saved and shown the way to future development and achievement? And so, if you look at human history, from the Renaissance to the Dark Ages to the Great War, you basically see these different houses kind of gaining power or ascendancy over one another. But the story really starts with a young boy of privilege getting recruited into the Shadow War.
Hurrah!
and you see this character basically, you know, his family is killed in front of him, his whole life is upended. And he's thrust in the situation where he doesn't know what's up, including his own sort of identity. And it's really that story that we're telling. And what's interesting about this is that we're going to work with a young writer, James Tynion IV. He's been in the business all of 5 years. And it's really interesting. He was actually a pupil of Scott Snyder and has always worked full script. And so kind of part of the fun of working with him is local in L.A. is that we sit together, we talk about, you know, share old war stories of like how comics were created in the past, and finding that he has a very different history and path to where he is now, his love of comics, than I had. We probably all had very similar paths in terms of the books we loved and the artists that we loved, and this new generation is different in that respect. So I feel like it's a great fusion of generations here. And what interests me about this on a visual level is not just a superhero book. We're going to actually incorporate a lot of science fiction and actually horror, and that's a genre I really haven't done a lot of work in, and there are certain artists that I've long admired that I want to kind of pull it into my repertoire of style. People like Wally Wood or Bernie Wrightson or Will Eisner. I'm definitely not comparing myself to any of those great masters. These are people I look up to and admire for inspiration, but it'd be really interesting to try to fuse a little more of that darkness and lushness of their brushwork into the work itself, and trying to push my style to make it fit the tonality of the book that we're trying to create. My 2 minute pitch.
I'm working on something called Silencer, and female assassin. Trying to adjust to a normal life. If that sounds derivative, I'm sure it's been done before. But the trick to this is that, and this is Dan Abnett's idea, this name, Silencer. Interestingly enough, all he did was throw the name out. We were at a seminar a couple of months ago, and he says, I've got some names, we should work with these names. And he threw out the word Silencer. I said, I love that name, that's a great name for a character. He says, I think it should be a female. Oh, great idea, let's do the female. He said, let's think of it as a John Wick. Female John Wick. Okay, but this is different because this is not a tragedy that causes this lady to be what she is. She's already this way. But she works, puts her time in with this criminal organization. She's timed out. She put in her time. She's done. Now she goes back to becoming a normal female again. She's recalled, so to speak. She's reactivated. She's got to do things differently to adjust to it. The original boss of this, what's the name of that criminal organization again?
Leviathan.
The lady that ran Leviathan reactivates her. Or she's been pushed out. And now she's got to readjust. Original adjustment, go back to normal life. She's got an ex-husband and a son. And interestingly enough, ironically, her job was to stop evil men. Now she's got a male, an ex-husband, and a son. How do you balance the hatred for these evil men? And you have a son and an ex-husband that you're dealing with. It's incredibly ironic, but she's going to be different in that Dan and I know what is called derivative to this point. We know what we have to do to make it different. She's not the average-looking superhero. Another thing I love about this is I love the combination of the real and the fantasy. If there's too much superhero, not enough melodrama, you get overweighted. If there's too much of the reverse, yeah, you're overweighted. Finding this right balance of this fantastic character with the fantasy part of it, that's what we're going to balance. She's not Superman, but she's a super assassin with all the trinkets and what she does and how she handles it. She's buzzed her hair because long hair is a problem when you're fighting animals. Right. Buzzes her hair. And she is lean. and the utilities, the costumes, the trinkets, I don't know why I picked that because that was the quickest page I did, but she's got a Polynesian tattoo on her shoulder, and it's on the middle of her back. That's the war, it's the Polynesian war symbol. And there's so much about her that hasn't been done before, and we're going to bring this to the front. What I love about it is there's a challenge to doing an assassin different than ever been done before. It's been done to death, I guess the Punisher, John Wick. But this is going to be different because we know going in what we have to do to make it different. Dan Abnett's idea is brilliant. I love the way she comes out in that she is not a superhero, muscular, gigantic Wonder Woman. She is lean. She's cut, she's chiseled, and emotionally as well. And there's no tragedy that caused her to want to kill everybody. She's like, this is a job. This is a job, and she loves what she's doing, but she was done. And now she's reactivated by this, the leader, Pelianhu. Reactivates her because of something that happened to her, ironically. And she was the leader of this evil organization. The irony is not lost upon on all of us. And I'm really looking forward to getting this character going, because it's something I like is, it's the amount of street-level reality balanced against a little bit of fantasy. That's, to me, that's quality. And I can't wait to get this going.
Okay. For me, this is going to be short and sweet, pretty much, because we're pretty much still in the infancy of putting all this together. What attracted me to the project mostly was I like switching it up for myself as far as doing superheroes, real things, science fiction, dinosaurs, and that's all what's going to be in here. Evil scientists, all kinds of cool stuff like that. That's why you see a bunch of monsters on the top right, that guy on the left, just basic ideas that I'm working on the spot to come up with. We got a diverse group down on the bottom left, but another thing that also attracted me to this was some of the covers my father had drawn for John. I don't know if you remember, there was a cover with a big hangman's noose, and you see all the challengers walking
up. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, walking up to
it.
And I'm sure, Dan.
What?
As a kid, that image is stuck in my head. When this project came up, I jumped at the chance. So, it's just something I really want to do. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun to do.
I think a lot of that's also set up in the Dark Days event, the previous books. And that actually, I mean, as Suki said, all the stuff is set in the DC universe. I mean, even Immortal Men will be touching upon other DC iconic characters, I think.
The cool part about it is, and you and John have described this before, it's not strange superheroes. It's all professional. It's all different genres. I look forward to you doing horror stuff. I can't wait.
And it's Challenger 64.
64.
Oh, okay, yeah, love that one. Yeah.
There you go. Want to just frame it all with Metal and what the game plan is for Metal?
Well, first I'll tell you, the thing I'm most excited about is I'm reuniting with my brother Scott Snyder, which I love working with that kid after the beating. So, but anyway, I don't want to tell you too much because I don't want to be spoilery. So, one of the things is going to be cool. A lot of people have always asked me, oh, why don't you like to do that character? Why don't you do Justice League and all that? And so, I'm going to have an opportunity to put my hands on a lot of different DC characters. So, I'm excited to do that. I don't like team books. So this is getting to put my hands on them without it being a full-time team book. So that's cool. And so basically, there's going to be like a problem that is recognized by certain forces, Batman being one of them, but everybody's going to have a different idea of what that thing means and how they should go about solving that problem. And just like we use space and the dark matter and such, we have the multiverse, and that's going to be something that kind of plays into what we're doing. And so we're going to be able to take things and open doors that have not been opened before that are going to remain open and in place after everything's done. Basically, what we're going to do at the end of this, when it's all done and hopefully
you're
done
all of it. Look at the end of it.
But what I'm going to say is by the end, hopefully you'll love it. And hopefully it will also have you daydreaming about where we're going to take things and the potential for where we can take things. And that's pretty much all I want to say. Other than, now it's just that the whole time.
let's start for a second. Any questions you guys want this? Because I mean, we're talking about this. The way this is all established right now, like I said, is we have the Forge in June, casting in July. We have the start of Metal in August, and then we'll be introducing two of these Dark Matter books in September and October, and then another one in December. So we have a nice little rollout here that's going on. I feel very confident to say that I think it's a nice slow introduction of new material, so it gives a chance to do it. The things that we didn't mention out there, and this is an important part of this, these books will be premiering at a $2.99 price point. It's very important for us to make these accessible and affordable to as many people as possible. And we're going to do something extraordinarily dramatic. We're going to put one cover on it. Yes. But the logic is this is part of the fan, and me with the idea of one cover. You want, this is the starting point for characters, this is the starting point for stories. You want to have that one issue, that one cover to point to and say, this is where it began, this is the one you should hold, this is the one you should hold. And reality is that we can put multiple covers on multiple things, and we can basically put the word out there to say that, you know, this is one way to sell it, is by aggregating a bunch of things, but selling them all to the same people. And what we're hoping to do is make this one book accessible to as many people as possible. It's about growing our audience, not just selling more to the same folks over and over again. We want, and we love the base that we have, but we've got to keep on building, we've got to keep on introducing new people to our industry. And new characters are a great entry point. This entry point gets you into the DC universe, and hopefully gets to these other characters that we love as well. So it's all one big plan. But that's why this is so important for us to have the strength of these four gentlemen leading the charge, because the name sells. And it's important for us to lean on the people that people feel confidence in, faith in, and they know that the level of work they're going to get is going to be exceptional.
There's another point to this.
Sure.
We've got to do something that we haven't done before.
Yeah.
As artists.
You're great.
The most difficult thing to do is to do something you haven't done before, even if you've been doing it for 40 years. Not just down to a visual, to a panel, or a group of panels, or an action shot. This, the character itself has to be different. The way you handle the character has to be different. And the ultimate artist, the art has to be different. That is a challenge. You can't always get to it, because everything's been done to death. It's like coming up with a new melody. How does anybody come up with a new melody? It's been done a million times, a billion times. How do you come up with a new idea for a novel? You still have to try it. So we're challenged. Use the pun. We're challenged to come up with something new and different. You don't always get there, but going in knowing you're doing something new and different instead of just cashing a paycheck, I love that kind of challenge. Do it right, new and different, or it's going to be canceled. Oh shit, I'll take personal offense to that.
What you're talking about is what keeps you, and this is how I approach each project. It keeps you interested, it keeps you going, it keeps you motivated. And I always challenge myself to come up with some different way of doing layouts, some different techniques, some different storytelling techniques, penciling techniques, something like that. You know, something that would actually fit the story.
Absolutely.
You know, and then it keeps your interest. If we did the same thing
over
and over and over again, it gets monotonous.
Because if you think about somebody that picks up this idea of a female assassin, they're going to roll their eyes. Okay. But there's been female assassins a billion times in TVs, on TV shows and movies. How many Bond movies are there? So it's been done to death, assassin. So knowing that, the challenge is to do something different. Make her look different. Somebody wanted her to be this persuasion. Somebody wanted her to be this persuasion. So I made it non-ethnic. You can't tell what she is. But she's exotic looking. She's also built like this lady at my gym. Who is a fitness maniac, this lady. She's also a lawyer. But there is no body fat in this woman. And she is not gorgeous, she's exotic looking. This is the kind of female character I'm going to use. Doing something different, not doing it the same as anything we've done before, is the challenge, because assassins have been done to death. That's why we have to do it different. I take it as a personal affront that somebody says, it's the same old shit. I'm going to be really upset. And I just beat that person to death. So I love that kind of challenge. And I do it to myself. Just like you said, different angles, different images. Maybe different production in that. Maybe we can do something with the color artist as opposed to standard look. I film noirish, maybe. If it were black and white, I would love it even more. So anything to make this different from the Magnum crowd, that's a challenge to all of us.
Questions, please? We'll keep going.
So one of the things I noticed about all the books, they all seem to have either female or personal color leads. Queer content. Can you tell me a little bit about that decision, like to look at more diverse characterizations and representation of the line?
Well, I do want to say this, because I always, growing up, drawing a crowd scene, I was just filled up with white people. Why? I was a white person, so I know how to draw white people because I had one. But then you go and you walk through the cities, like streets of Manhattan, right? And you see everybody there. And so, as I mature, I'm no longer a young boy and I've been around the world. the thing you go is, like, the world is all of this. And so now I just, as my adventures into art, I try and include, you know, all the things that I come into contact with. Because, I mean, that's really what we do, is we give our impression of the world that we take in through our eyes, you know, all the time. And so it just doesn't make any sense not to include everybody, because that's reality, right? And so right, and that's what makes it more real. And that's one of the keys to making this stuff work for the spirits, because obviously you know these guys don't fly around, have all these kind of powers, and by grounding them in a world that we're all so familiar and intimately familiar with, that's what makes it work. And that's why it's so important to do that. And so it just makes common sense. And, you know, of course, I'm an older guy now, so it seems like, ugh, at this point, right? But as a young guy, you don't think that. You're too mentally mature. But now it just seems like the most common sense thing to do. You wonder why it was constantly prevalent and present in all comics.
Right.
Do you want
to take care? Yeah. No, I was just going to say, we want everything to be reflective of today. I mean, that goes without saying. I think what's important is that we have to capture today's world, today's society, and put it on our page and make it recognizable, relatable. That's not just thinking about the characters relatable, which is important to what the storytelling about this is, but also the world relatable. So when they step in there, they have a basis for the fantasy to work. As soon as I step into this world, I know how the people should act and behave because that's part of my environment. That way, when we take you to the incredible fantasy that we want to bring in and expand the world, you go right along with it because you're already grounded and you're already relating to the people who are taking you through that adventure. I think that's the win, and it's exciting. It really is. And every time we see it, we get excited. We don't even, and he's not kidding, we don't even notice it. You know, I'm working with Kenneth Rockford on Sideways, and I just gave him the names of characters and he sent it back. And that's all his vision, his purpose, his eyes, because that's what he wanted to bring to the table, and we want to take that creative energy of everybody that's participating and really bring it to the thing, but make sure it's reflective of today's world, because this is about growing an audience that want to grow and be inclusive as possible.
And you know, it's funny. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, it's like, you know, I hear a lot of people crying out for, you know, their own representation, whatever it be, color, sexuality, whatever, and reading comics myself, I never thought of that. But then I go, I was wrestling this. Bruno Sammartino was the heavyweight champion when I was growing up. He's a fellow Italian. That was a big deal for me, you know what I mean? It was like this pride thing, like, because he was a superhero, you know? And so, in that respect, even though I never noticed it in comics, I totally hear that voice, because it's kind of cool. When you go, yeah, that's right, man. The Italians got the heavyweight championship. You know? And so, in that regard, I think that's going to be a cool thing for people who are looking at that. And they get that. That's their Bruno Sammartino. You go, yeah, I know that. That's who I am. I relate to that. That's one of us. You know, and that's going to be a cool thing for everybody. That's fun.
But there's a cynical way of looking at this. If, to your point, that why are you coming up with more diversity when everybody knows that you're doing that? I disagree, especially with the character I'm working on. If somebody had taken the Punisher and made it a female instead of what it is now, Frank Castle is now Francine Castle. That would piss me off. So we have a female assassin. It's two choices, male or black, there are three choices. We don't do transgenders just yet. But if it's a female, that's not a big deal to me. It's been done both ways. I don't think of it as a diversity item at this point. I think it's just a new character.
Yeah.
I think it's great to have a new character. If we did a male assassin, you'd roll your eyes just like you'd say, well, there's another assassin. Oh, shit. Well, let's do it differently. Okay? Let's start with a female. If she goes to become a male someday, then it's probably our fault. That's kind of... I just don't look at it as a diversity thing, because there have been great female characters, great characters of color over the decades.
And I want to just jump in on that, because this is important, because something we said in the other room, which is about rebirth. Rebirth is about restoring the existing characters back to the core sensibilities, recognizable to the fan base. What's exciting about this is a blank slate. So we can start here and be anything we want to be. And that's perfect, because there's no preconceived notions about any characters. That's what we're talking about. This isn't about upsetting a pre-existing fan base. This is about creating a new fan base. And any chance that we have to create a new fan base is a win. It's a lot tougher to do it, because it's a lot easier just to keep on playing with the same characters over and over again. But you know where now is that everybody's playing with those characters, and I see the movies and the TV shows sometimes doing it better than the comics. So what do we need to do? We've got to stay one step ahead, and we've got to be creating the new stuff. And that's why we're counting on the folks who have the track record of creating new material and having people buy into it. I referred, you know, I talked to Jim a lot about the image days, because I'm fascinated by that. Fascinated by it. Because if you think about image, the startup, seven guys in 92 basically said, we don't need to work within the system, the only system that's existed to this point. We're going to break free. We're going to create new characters, new ideas based on our name values. And they did, and they took the industry by storm. They challenged DC a second place, and I think you've overcome them at one point or another, if I'm not mistaken.
Those are the months where we surpassed.
But seriously,
we didn't ship the books, but they
but it's a month.
That was true.
But it showed that this can happen. We can create new. And somewhere along the lines, we got scared. And we stopped creating new ideas. Because we just worried about servicing the same existing audience. And we have to be a little more fearless in what we do. But rather than taking risks on characters and upsetting people, let's create new stuff and bring new people in.
See, that's one of the things that we were talking about among ourselves, you know, is one of the reasons that it doesn't work is when you just try and take a character who everybody's known for a long time, and because you want to create diversity, then we're just going to change this. That's force-fitting, it's retrofitting, and that never works comfortably. The idea is to create new characters and new roles, and to be judged on their own merit. Instead of trying to take something that exists and go, we're going to just force it this way because this crowd is asking for that, or that crowd is asking for that. It's not really, to me, the right way to approach it. It has to develop organically. It starts with story, and you develop new characters. The goal is to bring new characters. I mean, you think about the heyday where, you know, with Stan and Jack, how much they were just creating, bam, 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 left and right. You know, we want to get to that exciting stage now to do that. Yeah. And just have that happen as a result of all the creation, yeah. Not trying to go, we're just going to bolt that thing on there and unscrew that, and, you know, we're going to just have it.
And you talk about Jack Kirby, you talk about Jack Kirby coming to DC Comics. Jack Kirby comes to DC Comics, he doesn't go, I'm going to go do Superman, I'm going to go do Batman, I'm going to go do Green Lantern, he's not going to do that. Comes in and creates a whole new pantheon of characters.
Yeah.
You know, and a whole new pantheon, you think about it, some of them were successful, some of them weren't successful, and the runs weren't that long, but the impression that he made in the industry with that material lasts longer than anything else out there. You know, you could talk about, at that moment in time, when New Gods comes out, or the Demon comes out, or even Commanding Sarge, you can know that moment in time, I challenge you to say, what exactly happened in Justice League that same month, or Batman that same month, or Superman that same month? You know what? Because those stories were moving along. This was this burst of energy, creative energy, and we're hoping to capture that same burst of creative energy. That's we're
trying to psych each other up.
Yeah, exactly. Jim talks about the sense of competition between talent. You know, try to one up each other and do better jobs, and you want to get that competitive spirit going because people who win are the fans. You know, the more we create, the better we create, the better they charge stuff, the harder they work, the more people win.
One of the best things that I went through was back in February in Burbank, mm-hmm. when we had everybody come in and we sat around the tables and talking about the round robin type of thing. That got my happiness so charged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
But to answer your question, I think, which is, was there an edict to bring diversity to the line? I think I was very reassured. Everyone kind of did it organically. Like in our book, the main lead is a character named Caden Park. He's Korean. And I asked James, hey, can we make the lead Korean? Just because I've never... we had Grunge before, but he was in the lead of Gen 13. Can we make this Korean? Just because there's things from my past and experience that I can bring to this to make it feel more authentic.
Well, Shane Martino, but
next we're going to try to create a character. Short, middle-aged, to
you describe my old neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm really excited over it seems like you're opening the door to new voices as a new artist that you will mentor
right.
to be able to come in.
Do you draw?
I don't.
I don't either, that's why I stand up.
But I have to ask you that, what are the things that you're doing so that I can, for my article, recruit more girls and women?
Oh, absolutely. There's a couple things going on. I'm going to tip something here that I'm probably not allowed to say. That's why I'm doing for publicity. That's why you're terrible. First thing is that we have our talent workshops. And we have a talent, we have a website set up that we review, and we have a talent workshops. And what we're going to do is make sure that the talent comes in there, gets the opportunity to really goes into it and works into the system and, you know, the process of DC. The good part is that folks like John and Jim and Andy and you know, these guys want to help teach. So they've been helpful with giving ideas. They get on part of the seminars. We use Scott on the writer's side, and we get everybody on, and they start to talk to them, and they're teaching as we go along. That's why this is part of a masterclass. This is just about these guys just doing the books. It's about passing on craft and knowledge of comic books onto the next generation. We don't want, you know, we don't want this to stop here. We want to keep this going. So that's essential to what we're doing. But, and where I'm tipping our hands is that this isn't just about DCU. DC itself is getting ready to probably just expand our appeal and the ways we do books. And this is just the first stage of a long plan on how we're going to expand our marketplace, expand who we are, and grow the business. Not just in sense of trying to reach out in many ways possible with all types of storytelling so that we can take advantage of all types of talent and really put them to, you know, put them to work at DC in a way that I think will be beneficial to everyone.
If you Google DC Talent Development Program, it'll pop up. So there's a website for both artists and writers, and we've had two classes or sessions of both. And young artists from all around the world, slightly more accomplished writers that we brought in, again, yeah. Represented from all around the world.
Yeah.
And that runs in parallel to this. This is the master class, and then the 20 other artists that we're talking about are already working in the business that we're identifying to take over key titles in the DC line. The talent development program are people that, especially on the artist side, may have one professional cred or none at this point. They basically are submitting their work through the website.
So, these people who are submitting their work, are they like submitting a brand new superhero and they're like...
No. Generally, I think we give them a sample script, and they're encouraged just to draw something that already exists. We're not trying to it's very rare that you find someone that has never worked professionally that has an idea that everyone loves and wants to publish.
And if you do, you just steal it.
But it's also it's a lot of pre-published work that we review, so we get a lot of samples of work. Writers-wise, it's published scripts or sample scripts.
Right.
Art-wise, it's usually published work or sample pages that we get a script to work.
So how are you guys opening the door then so that aside from this any parallels, that you have like more women and girls? Because you guys are cool and all,
sure.
But
that's true.
I don't know, if you can like personify.
Oh no!
You should Google the talent development program. You'll see the last two classes. We fly people in from all around the world, literally from Indonesia, Korea. Male and female artists. So they're not necessarily the best artists, but the ones that have the most potential and reflective of the diversity that we want to bring in our talent.
Yeah. And that's a key aspect of everything. It's just to grow the business.
Right.
Again, just like Jim explained, increase the character because of his Korean background, bringing that to the table. The only way we can truly diversify is to diversify our talent base to bring in multiple voices in.
These guys are just kicking off the
program because they're leaning on their name strength to draw attention to it, but the goal is to take it from the start here and extend it out as wide as possible. Okay. Coach.
There was recent comments in the industry about how artists needle for sales. I mean, obviously you're starting out with some superstar artists here. Could you perhaps speak to that, about that part of the industry?
No, we're fine. He's been broke first. Off the record.
Off the record. No, it's not the record. It's the comment. That's my comment.
Okay.
Yeah.
He puts his leg.
That's it. There's a comment.
I've done treatments. I've written a script. I've done screenplay. I've written screenplays. I'm going to produce a short film in a couple of weeks. I'm going to direct a short film in a couple of weeks. We have worked in the business long enough to say that we have written these books because if we co-plot them and then we manifest that in art, we are the co-creators. The problem is people have the impression that writers are the gods of this product. They're not. They're the dialogue people. Yes, they come up with the idea. They pass the idea to us. We manifest it into visuals. Then they write the dialogue. I actually take offense to that notion that artists, I'm sorry, this late.
Like, what did I do?
I'm sorry. Not that you mentioned it, but the notion that artists can't move the needle, I think that's insane. I think saying it to about a writer is just as silly when it's the combination of the two.
This is about collaboration, guys. This is only about collaboration. This isn't about one over the other. It's about teamwork, team efforts. You know, when you talk about Kirby Lee or Hearn Clairmont or any of these teams, you know, or Wolfman Perez, it's a team. That's when you get your greatest work.
Interestingly enough, when I was very young in the industry, asking for a page rate raise, I was told by the editor-in-chief, what do you want a raise for? You can just get anybody to do this and the book will sell really well. At that time, anybody that did Spider-Man or the X-Men, the book was selling very well. That may have been his hammer to keep me from getting a raise. If somebody can say, anybody that can just draw pictures will produce sales, they're insane, because that's just not the case anymore.
So Spider-Man already sold. Tom McFarlane took over some Spider-Man, and sold
more
Spider-Man since like World War II or something like that, as I recall. So I'll just say he's probably regretful that he said something so silly.
I absolutely agree with that. It was silly that he even come near that notion.
Yeah, but the one thing we always want to say here is that we started this program way before that was said. This is something that we've been working on diligently for a while. Because I sit next to Jim Lee. I'm sorry, but that has a lot of effect on me in realizing the importance of how it is to really be truly collaborative and take advantage of the strength of everybody in front of me.
Can I just ask you, because I think even though this comic's got so much attention right now, there has been a longer feeling. I mean,
sure.
To start that. So, I mean, I guess I would say, do you feel that this, that putting the artists, I mean, even having you guys talk, you know, it's wonderful because you're very colorful, especially Greg.
I think it's also.
I'll give you my phone number, sure.
There's an equally annoying part of this is that Marvel has decided not to have high priced artists, whereas they prefer to have high priced writers, thinking writers will come up with new ideas, but you always fill some art in afterwards. I think they're sorely mistaken, and I think their sales are reflecting it. And I think I'd like to speak to this person in public, face to face, and say what I think will
happen. We have another question over here.
She had my question as well, but I have another one, which is the DC line continues to expand with Hanna-Barbera and things along those lines, whereas, you know, just pointed out that Marvel sales are how, as the brand continues to grow, how are you incorporating these new intellectual properties like Hanna-Barbera and the other things into stuff like this? Will we see Johnny Quest in the new Challengers? Will we see those things?
So the one here, Jim identified properly, he calls it a pop-up imprint. What we call is, if we have a sensibility, a theme, or a creator that's in the lead, we could build or curate a series of books around that person. And we did it with Gerard Way on Young Animal. We've had the Hanna-Barbera, which is a small curated list of books there too. Not anything major, but I love the diversity of the line. You know, we talk about diversity of the line, just styles of tone, stories, ideas. We've constantly got to keep on broadening our appeal and giving ourselves opportunities that aren't just about superheroes. We can't be just one size fits all. That's not who we are. DC is very successful in really carving new territories from the days from Vertigo on out, and we want to continue to be as innovative as that is. I mean,
Look, I think you have an imprint. There's a certain amount of expectation that comes with it. It has to be around for a long period of time. It has to have continuity. It has to have some balance there. What we love about the pop-up imprints is it allows us to work off of inspiration, work off the collective passion that people have for a project or a particular storyline. So when you look at Young Animal, the fact that Gerard Way had this passion for these characters, that we were able to entice Warren Ellis to come back and do a multi-year take on the Wildstorm characters. We'd rather do that because, A, we know that we're going to get some awesome creative work, and, B, it allows us to go out there and promote it heavily for what it is, and then at the end, reassess whether we're going to continue going forward with it and not have to continue publishing a line for the sake of publishing. So we have our core lines in place, but allows us to be nimble, to be flexible, and as opportunities come up with creators that say, I've got this great vision for this character, I see it as a 2-year project, I can bring in two of my three, like friends that are awesome creators as well, that it's really easy for us to embrace that and push that, and again, it gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility. So yeah.
We'll keep these things going as long as we feel they have traction and viability. We won't keep them long going past their shelf life. I'm the Hanna-Barbera guy, you can probably tell. I grew up on this stuff and I love it. What Mark Russell's doing on Flintstones is brilliant.
Yeah.
His Snagglepuss is probably going to be just as crazy. It's kind of fun. I'm talking about Snagglepuss as a comic book. You have to do that.
So last question, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay. I have a pair of questions. One was really fun and one was not at all. Which one?
We'll start with the not at all part.
Yeah. Okay, there's a history with these kind of imprints of new books, or not an imprint, but a label, a banner of new books coming out of events and introducing these waves of new characters, kind of just falling apart.
Absolutely right.
And, you've got, obviously, the Murderer's Row of artists here to help you bolster that.
I want to be big book.
Oh, wait. Also, imagine. One more kind of different and more sustainable.
It's sensibility. The idea is, listen, you're absolutely right, it's difficult, but the level of energy, attention, and quality of talent I think shows our dedication to the line and how much we value it. Like I said, when Jack Kirby came over, he did a bunch of brilliant ideas that fell very quickly, but to tell you the truth, they have more longevity than a lot of things created around the same time, because they inspired a lot of other people. When we started with this team, we knew we'd be able to bring attention to this. And not all these guys will stick through for an extended period of time, but they're able to give their energy to help launch this. And what we really want to do is instill a style of storytelling and sensibility that works within Dark Matter, but also can work in other titles that we do as well. Because really what this is about is bringing a level of energy and visual excitement back to just comic book storytelling that we feel we've not gotten away from, but sort of taken a half step back from. And we want to embrace it in the best way possible. So what I'm hoping Dark Matter does really is really sets a style and tone and a visual sense of comic book storytelling that we know and love. We use the expression, we went to rebirth, to identify what we loved about our characters and embrace that and put it back in the books. This is about what we love about comics, not just about a character or a story. How we look, Secret Identity, Power of Price, the Price of Power, all these things that are trappings of great comic book storytelling being put back in there. The great fantasy world energy that we haven't seen, and we keep on shrinking our storytelling, but the movies are expanding it. And the movies shouldn't be telling more fantasy stories than us. We have unlimited budgets. They seem like they have unlimited budgets, but they don't. If that's the goal, we got to make ourselves big and expansive, and if we can take that energy, take it from Dark Matter, and then grow it out from there, then that's the win. Even more so than which title succeeds and which one doesn't.
If I could add to that. I'll tell you that having spent many years at Wildstorm before I sold the company to DC, it was always tricky launching anything. And I think we always were envious of the fact that they had the DC Universe, which had been around for 60 plus years at that time, maybe 70. And had that innate fan base and appeal of these iconic characters. So I think that's a big part of it, actually, that we're part of the DC Universe. But if you look at all the different projects, we're not trying to pitch a new Superman. We're not trying to pitch a new Batman. We're picking parts of the DC Universe that haven't been explored or mined. And so we're adding to that general conversation, the general narrative of the entire DC Universe. So you have characters that are fighting a Shadow War. You have a new assassin that's more street and very kind of down to earth. You have Challenges of the Unknown that are exploring literally the unknown of the DC Universe. So I think being able to play in that sandbox and add new stuff, that's the winning recipe, and obviously having great writers and artists as well.
So that's actually a perfect segue to the second thing I was going to ask you. You talked a lot about bringing new ideas to the DC Universe, having you kind of brought the core back to Rebirth, and all the artists up here have talked about touching different genres, sci-fi, horror, that kind of stuff. And you, Dan, have also compared, in the communication story, specifically compared Dark Matter to The Return of Barry Allen, The Marvel Age.
Introduction of Barry Allen, actually.
Right, The Introduction of Barry Allen, Return of the Flash.
Yeah.
And there are some properties here, like Challengers, that go back,
Yep.
You, I'm sure, well known well before, even Barry Allen.
Mid-50s, yeah.
But, and this horror and sci-fi and stuff here, which are things that kind of predate the superhero film. Is that an intentional thing?
Correct. Absolutely. The goal was to go where we weren't, fill in the blanks. You know, we by getting to the DC universe, we got the traditional superhero down pat with Superman and Batman. We know who they are. Now it's to fill in those corners and start to create new people. And if you see, there's actually a weird mixture. Babbage and Challenges are pre-existing names, but brand new interpretations. Mortal Men takes off an initial idea, but it expands it out in a new way. And Saddles and Sideways, which is all brand new. And there are more stuff that we're looking at, and we want to be judicious about how we use it. But this is the ones we have a lot of faith in, and we were ready to bring out from public record.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Thank you very much.
So, Jim, I meant to ask you, with Immortals, is there any chance of seeing the Trinity of Sin or Phantom Stranger?
Not in the initial part of the comics.
Because when I first read that, I was like, oh, that's perfect for them.
But I think there's definitely...
Down the road?
Well, those are the types of characters we want to play around with.
Right.
They might introduce new lawyers. Aspects of music. There's stuff that appeals to me is creating the new stuff.
Well, I love Gotham by Midnight. I thought that was a great book. And
good.
So I'm looking forward to the Mortals.
Secondary network.
Thank you.
Netflix and
also, can I get a picture?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let me turn off my
quality and I knew
I'd go.